Hello, everyone. I want to welcome you to the Free Men Beyond the Wall podcast. This is your host, Mance Rader. This is episode 114. It's going to go up on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Evoox, YouTube. It's going to be on my website, freemanbeyondthewall.libsyn. That's L-I-B-S-Y-N. com, and it'll be on libertarianinstitute.org at libertarianinstitute.org/Mance. I want to remind you about my book, The Kids Are Not All Right. Check it out on Amazon, and I have an announcement right now. It is available on my website, freemanbeyondthewall.com/store. It is only available on my website for cryptocurrency. I'm accepting 6 or 7 different cryptocurrencies for it. I will sign it, personalize it any way you want. So go to my store, check it out. It's a very, very easy checkout process. It goes through a company called Coin Payments. So if you want to use your crypto to get my book, both of my books are on there. Freedom Through Memedom's on there as well. If you want to get them both in one shot, check it out. freemanbeyondthewall.com/store. Today, I am welcoming Roger Paxton. Roger is the host of the Lava Flow podcast. Roger is also up in New Hampshire and is a quote-unquote member of the Free State Project. He is a evangelist for the Free State Project. He's going to talk about his move to New Hampshire. He's going to talk about his first impressions, and he's been there for 2.5 years now. He's going to talk about what his life is like living around people and interacting with people on a daily basis who share the same philosophy that he does. So without any further delay, here's a recording of my conversation with Roger Paxton. All right, man. Roger, thank you for coming back on. Just to let everyone know, this is the second conversation Roger and I are having. The audio did not come out. It was a blank MP3 the first time we talked. So
now, just be honest with him. The conversation was so good, we just wanted to do it all over again.
Well, one thing I got out of that conversation was really what I wanted to talk to you about. And you live in New Hampshire.
Yes.
You're not, where are you originally from?
I am from Arkansas, just right outside of Memphis, Tennessee, about 7 miles from Memphis, Tennessee.
Yeah, it's really weird that I've been to Memphis and it's like you're minutes to Mississippi, you're minutes to Arkansas. Yep. It's like, yeah, cool town too. I didn't get a chance to.
Well, it's great to visit, but it's not so great to live there. I mean, corrupt politics, horrible crime. I mean, it's just a horrible place to raise kids, and I had 2 young kids, so, you know, we were looking to get out.
Yeah. And when did you move to New Hampshire?
We moved up here October of 2015, so about 2.5 years ago.
Okay. And when did you start hearing things about the Free State Project?
So I first heard about the Free State Project I heard about it on the internet and just kind of blew it off. And then at the 2010 National LP Convention, my wife and I ran into some folks there that had a Free State Project booth. And, you know, we talked to them and it sounded, oh man, that sounds really cool, but man, it's cold up there, right? So, you know, that's what you always hear. It's so cold up there. So we, you know, again, kind of blew it off, but I was kind of, you know, we were ready to get out of the Memphis area. Both my wife and I had been in that area all our lives. And we were raising young kids, and we started looking at options. We were looking to Austin, Texas, because we have a lot of libertarian friends in Austin, and it's such a really cool city. I love Austin. But, you know, we were also looking at New Hampshire. And when we started investigating the concerns we had about New Hampshire, like the weather, driving in the snow and those sorts of things, we found out it's really not that bad. As a matter of fact, the average temperature in New Hampshire over the year is really not that much different than most of the rest of the country. I mean, it's only a few degrees different. Now, does it get cold in the winter? Sure. You know, we had a week this year in December that was, you know, sub-zero and just absolutely bone-chilling. But the rest of the winter was, you know, not so bad. It's no different than anywhere else. Of course, in the summer in Arkansas, it was so damn hot I couldn't walk outside without, you know, pouring buckets of sweat. And, you know, the way I see it, I can put on clothes to get warm. I can only take off so much to cool off and still be decent. So, you know, it's kind of a trade-off.
Today I spend the majority of my day outside. And today was one of those days where it only got up to about 80 degrees, but it was raining all day. The humidity was, the South is, I know people get the idea, we live in the cold, let's move to the South and everything. It's like, there's trade-offs on that, man.
Well, I much prefer the weather up here. It took me after that first winter to really get used to it. But now that I'm used to it, a couple of winters in, it's really not that bad. And I actually prefer it. I love it. I love being able to go outside and play in the snow with my kids. And really, if you're wearing the right kind of equipment, the right kind of clothes, the right kind of shoes, you don't even know it, that it's cold out there.
Cool. All right. So you talk to these people at the booth, you start looking around, I'm sure you were reading stuff on the internet. What kind of stories were you hearing? Let's start with this. What kind of negative stuff were you hearing?
Well, every movement that's bigger than two or three people has infighting and has, undesirables and people that cause problems. That's going to happen in any organization of any size. So we, knew that there was some of that coming into New Hampshire. But there was also that in Austin with their libertarian movement down there. So it's nothing new. Even the small libertarian movement we had in Arkansas had similar issues on a much smaller scale, of course. So, that was part of the negatives. Of course, the winter was a big negative. But really, other than that, there weren't any. And since moving up here, I see why. Because, being able to move up here and get plugged into, we call it our intentional family. It's the family that we chose. Getting plugged in with literally thousands of these people, you can't meet them all. I haven't met them all in 2.5 years, and I probably won't for another decade. And there's no feeling like it in the world. Memorial Day weekend, for example, we had to get together at one of our Free State Project friends' houses. He and his wife are actually running Liberty Forum next winter, which is one of the Free State Project events every year. And there were, 100 of us there. We all have the same basis of understanding of the non-aggression principle, how you treat people, and being able to bring that together just spur of the moment. I mean, it was, hey, this weekend we're going to get together and do this. 100 of us all get together and have the time of our lives. You're not going to get that in most states, to be surrounded by 100 libertarians like that on the spur of a moment. And it happens here every week. As a matter of fact, somewhere in the state, there's some sort of a libertarian event every single day of the week.
Wow.
You're not going to find that in any other state in the country.
No, that's finding like-minded people anywhere is hard, is hard enough. And I remember when I first became a libertarian, I obviously went to a libertarian meeting, a meeting of the local libertarian party. And I went to a meeting of the local libertarian party, one meeting of the local libertarian party, and I was done.
Yeah, the very first libertarian party meeting I went to in Arkansas, it was my wife and I showed up. And the first district representative which was one quarter of the entire state showed up. So it was literally three of us at the quarterly first district meeting. And that's when I was like, wait a second. So I said, I'm going to give this a chance. So I'll go to the second one. One other person shows up. Shortly after that, I realized, look, either I'm going to make some changes in this or I'm done. So I started, really becoming involved. I took over the first district. The next meeting that I went to, the third one that I was responsible for, we had 15 people there. By the time I left the first district, We were having 25 and 30 people every meeting because I was actually working it. You can actually do these things if you work it. Work social media, work your contacts, go to events. And then, I took over as chair for the state party, got the state party ballot access, full ballot access for the first time in Arkansas state history, and got some libertarians elected to partisan office. And then, of course, we came up here. So
how was the move?
It was fantastic. I mean, it's amazing because you show up here and you don't know anybody other than, on the internet. And we had the privilege of meeting a couple of people because I flew up here for my job interviews. But other than that, you really don't know anybody. We moved up here. The next day, my moving truck gets here and we had 35, 40 people show up at my house that I'd never met before in my life and had my truck unpacked in an hour, hour and a half. And that's how what they call them move-in parties. Basically, you supply pizza and beer and don't get the cheap shit. I made that mistake. Don't get Bud Light. Get some decent beer. But anyway, so they just show up and they take care of you. And then those are the people, they become your family, your chosen family.
So you had a job when you moved up there? You had something set up, everything?
I did, yeah. My wife, basically for about 3 months was full-time secretary. She was going to all the job boards. She was writing my, my cover letters and all of this, and basically she sent them to me, say, hey, you send this one to this person, this one to this person. So I did several, phone interviews and Skype interviews. And, then that company called me in. They actually flew me up for a weekend, put me on their, up in their beach house on Maine, right on the beach. It was gorgeous. And then, so that was Friday night. Had the full day interview on Saturday, and then Sunday morning I got a job offer. So it worked out great.
Oh, that's really cool. All right. Let's jump to kids. 'Cause I know, how many kids you have?
Two. One of them just turned 10 2 days ago, and the other one is 12.
What is the, with most of the free staters that you know, what would you say the percentage are that homeschool?
The vast majority. Now, of course, we do have some that, that use public schools and private schools. But I would have to say of the ones that I know, 75% or more do some form of homeschooling. And that's anywhere from, you know, strict, you know, just like in regular school, strict classes sort of homeschooling, all the way to how, you know, my family does it. We do radical unschooling, where basically it's child-led learning. The child, you know, directs their learning, what they desire to learn about. And we just let them be kids, you know. You only get one chance to be a kid. And goddamn it, when you're going to school, you know, 8 hours a day after a half hour drive to school and a half hour home, and then you got sports and homework and all that. When does a kid have a chance to be a goddamn kid anymore? They don't. I want my kids to be kids. There's plenty of time as they're, you know, growing up to learn the things that made me learn. I mean, for example, my 12-year-old, when he was 5, he taught himself to read because he was playing his video games and wanted to know what they were telling him. So he decided, hey, I'm going to teach myself to read. And he did. A few weeks later, he's reading everything you can imagine. And that's what child-directed learning is all about. And here in the Seacoast area of New Hampshire, we call it the Free Coast, just because we're weird like that. A lot of us are unschooling. As a matter of fact, we have a podcast on my podcast network called One Free Family that talks about radical unschooling and peaceful parenting, and it's by a couple that live here in the Free Coast, very good friends of mine. And, man, it's such a great podcast. I mean, I've been doing, you know, peaceful parenting and unschooling for a while, and I learn something from them every single episode. They're incredible people.
Mm. You know, what's funny, when you were talking about, you know, sending them half hour to school, then they're there for 8 hours and a half hour home, doesn't it just sound like they're just getting you ready for the grind of becoming a cog in the machine?
That's exactly what it is. I mean, if you look at the Prussian school system and why it was designed, that's exactly why it was designed. It was designed to make factory workers and docile citizens. Citizens that just sat back, did what you told them, and could do it repetitively over and over and over all day long. I'm sorry. I want much better than that for my kids. I want my kids to think for themselves. I want my kids to decide how they're going to live their lives, not some bureaucrat who's sitting there with a ruler all day smacking their hands. Fuck that. No, I'm so glad and I'm thankful that my kids have never stepped one foot inside any school, public or private. And I would never take that back. If there's one thing that I'm most proud of, it's that.
Yeah. I had Brett, you know, Brett Vinat, right?
Yep. Oh yeah. Of course. Great friend.
I had him on my podcast and, you know, I told him, I said, I was one of those people in school, especially in high school, who I was the classic clock watcher. It was just like, that was, what am I doing? Why?
That was me. Absolutely. Yeah. I was the same way. I could not stand to be there. And the few things that I did do that I actually enjoyed at the time, ROTC was one of them. I kind of got brainwashed a little bit in that area. And band, I was in high school band, and I did enjoy that because I was always into music really heavily. So even the things that I did enjoy were so structured and so boring, you know, for lack of a better term, that even then it took all the fun out of it. I much preferred doing music on my own than I did, you know, in the band in that structured environment. And, you know, look, some kids are made for structure. Some kids are never going to be more than a cog in the wheel. I get that. But I want much more for my kids. And my kids are both, they're so incredibly different, but they're both so smart in their own ways. They'll never be a cog in anybody's wheel. My kids question authority more than I question authority, and I wouldn't have it any other way. I wouldn't trade it for any amount of money in the world.
That would be awesome. I'd love to be around some 10 and 12 year olds where I would say, I would throw some statist language out there and they'd be like, what are you talking about? <They're> like,
no, my oldest would probably say, what fucking nonsense are you talking?
So, all right, where do I want to go from here? So, you get up there, you get a job. It sounds like, you know, immediately you got a job, you're settled in. What's going through your mind, like, when you first get there? What's, like, I mean, I know it's hard when you move somewhere. It's like, I got to get employment. I got to get settled down. But once all that's out of the way and you're settled in and you can finally breathe, what about the Free State Project, about the people that you're dealing with is the most, you know, is most attractive to you?
You know, like we talked about earlier, with any large group of people, you're going to have people that you don't want to deal with. And the great thing about being in New Hampshire is that you don't have to. So if in Arkansas, for example, if I wanted to hang out with libertarians, it was such a small number of libertarians to hang out with. Unfortunately, I had to hang out with people that I normally wouldn't have hung out with. Here, I've got the choice. There's almost 5,000 of us here now. 5,000 people who have signed the pledge that live in New Hampshire right now. That's incredible. That gives me so many choices of the types of people I want to hang out with, the types of people who treat me the way I want to be treated, and who like the way that I treat them. That's one of the most amazing things about this, is there are so many choices and so many different activities. I mean, I could literally do something every night. And when we first got here, we were overwhelmed with the amount of things to do. That took a lot of, because I wanted to do it all. You know, you want to do all the things. And that was so challenging for me to kind of limit myself, because I'm an introvert by design, a severe introvert in a lot of cases. And sometimes we just have to hibernate for a month or two. Matter of fact, this winter, because we've been so busy working on Porkfest for the summer, my wife and I kind of hibernated this winter and didn't do a whole lot. And then, you know, as soon as we start picking back up with, you know, going to the Memorial Day thing and things like that, there we are, just plugged right back into our family. There's no feeling in the world like being around so many amazing, hardworking, dedicated, brilliant individuals. I wouldn't trade it.
All right. Talk about, I've been talking to Vin Armani a lot about what's going on, his first impressions and cryptocurrency.
Yes.
I know cryptocurrency. I actually had someone wanted me to ask you a couple questions. I'll just pull those up real quick, but, can you use cryptocurrency? Can you go to the grocery store and can you use cryptocurrency?
I cannot go to the grocery store yet. Well, I take that back. So using the Shift card with Coinbase, if I have Bitcoin in my Coinbase account, I can use my Shift Visa credit card and use that for groceries if I so chose. But I guess the question is probably, is there a grocery store that takes crypto? No, not yet. We're working on that. But there are so many other stores and shops that do around the state. Portsmouth, for example, has one shop that takes Bitcoin for every 1,000 people that live, or actually it's more now. It's one shop for less than 1,000 people that live in the city. I mean, I could go to the theater. I could go get food at a couple of different restaurants. I can go get my hair cut. I can go to a yoga studio. There's, you know, like 20 some odd different places in Portsmouth alone that I can use Dash, Bitcoin, and Bitcoin Cash immediately, to get food and other services. You're not going to find that anywhere else in the world except New Hampshire. The Keene is also very similar because they've had a really large activist group in Keene doing that as well, spreading the crypto love, for lack of a better term. You're not going to find per capita anywhere else in the country or anywhere else in the world that has as many Bitcoin accepting companies as New Hampshire does.
Do you know of anybody who's actually taking Bitcoin as their income, receiving Bitcoin as their income?
I do know several people, actually. Joel Valenzuela takes Dash for his income because he works for Dash Force News, which is one of the DAOs for the Dash network. I know several people who live in the state who work for Coinbase directly, and they get paid in Bitcoin. As a matter of fact, one of those is renting a place for me, a place that I own. She rents for me, and she pays me in Bitcoin from her Bitcoin earnings that she gets working for Coinbase. So, yeah, we have several people like that. As a matter of fact, my kids also work for Bitcoin and Dash and other currencies because we have markets every month around the state where, you know, people can sell anything they want to. We have them at different liberty places around the state. My kids sell you know, hot dogs and Pronto Pups and popcorn and all these things for Bitcoin and Dash. They also sell eggs from our chickens, for crypto. And, they'll basically do all kinds of services and stuff for crypto as well. So even my kids are little entrepreneurs working for cryptocurrencies.
When did that start? When did, you've only been there 2.5 years, but has that been something you've seen grow since you've been there, or was it already in place when you got there?
It was already in place here. As a matter of fact, the first big place that got Bitcoin on the map was Free Talk Live, a New Hampshire-based Liberty radio show. So they really started talking about it before anybody was. And many people, including Roger Ver, Bitcoin Jesus, credit Free Talk Live with being the pinnacle of Bitcoin, the news about Bitcoin getting out there. Porkfest, the first Porkfest after Bitcoin was created, after Satoshi created it, it was a crypto mecca, and that's, again, really what got the ball going in Liberty circles, was that Porkfest having so many Bitcoin and other crypto talks, and it just exploded from there. So I believe, and I firmly believe, that New Hampshire was the genesis of the crypto revolution.
One thing that Vin told me when I was talking to him the other day was that there are some of the Vermont-style progressives coming over the border into New Hampshire, and is there a fear? Do you have a fear of them getting involved in politics and making a run at you guys?
Well, it's not so much the Vermont progressives; it's the Massachusetts progressives. A lot of Massachusetts folks will buy property up here for, you know, staying in for vacations and things like that. So we have a lot of that. I haven't noticed much Vermont, but I'm on the other side of the state, so okay. I probably don't see it as much as he does. Is there a fear of that? Well, sure. No more than, you know, the same kind of fear that I believe that libertarians can also move up here and affect change, and that's why we're here. We've already affected so much change in this state. Just last year, there were something like 40 pro-liberty bills that actually passed and were signed by the governor. Everything from, you know, Bitcoin being completely deregulated in the state, marijuana being decriminalized, and, you know, 30-some-odd other bills, pro-liberty bills passed. But there were a couple of stinkers as well. Medicaid was expanded in the state, which was actually voted on by two former Free State Project participants who were elected to the state house as Democrats. They both voted for that Medicaid expansion, but, you know, they're no longer participants anymore because they kind of went their own way. So, you know, it's not for everybody.
Well, actually, now that I think about it, I don't think it was Vin who was telling me about the Vermont people. I can't remember them who it was, but that's neither here nor there at this point. Oh, so why don't you tell me, like, you know, give me a story about something that's happened since you've been there that you just don't, you know, people coming together when something went wrong, and something that you might not see anywhere, something that you may not have seen anywhere else if it wasn't for, you know.
Yeah, so one example is we had some Democrats in the state who wanted to encroach on homeschooling rights in the state. And New Hampshire is one of the best states in the country as far as homeschooling rights. The restrictions, the regulations that my family have to go through are very, very minimal. I mean, almost nothing. There was a concerted effort in the state legislature to change that. A lot of Free State Project participants, along with some other people, got together and packed out the state house. I mean, literally packed it out. They went on for hours and hours and hours giving testimony saying why this is a bad idea. I think there were only two people that spoke for the bill out of the, you know, dozens and dozens that spoke against it. And even though before all that happened, there was positive support for the bill, it likely would have passed. It completely was overturned and shut down after that meeting. And that's just one event. I mean, you know, we've had issues where, you know, people will lose their job and, you know, the community comes together and just, you know, does everything that they can to help them out, giving them a place to stay, loaning them money, whatever the case may be. I've seen that happen probably, I don't know, 3 or 4 times since I've been in New Hampshire. And, you know, it's a community like I've never been involved in. You know, you hear about communities like churches and things like that. And, you know, it's funny because my parents, when I moved up here, thought I was joining a cult. They really thought I was joining a cult. And I guess from the perspective of, you know, being almost church-like, where you have a community of people that cares about each other and really is invested in taking care of each other, you know, maybe it is a little bit. But it's a broad definition of cult, I guess, if this fits the definition. But that's what it is. It's a group of people who really care about each other.
I wanted to switch, I want to see if there was something else that I wanted to ask you, and I'm trying to figure it out right now. I'm trying to remember. Okay, yeah. If somebody's listening to this and they've been thinking about, participating in the Free State Project, about moving to New Hampshire, give your sermon, your apologetics on why they should do it.
We only have so many days in this world to live. And I have never lived the way that I have in the last 2.5 years. Not only me, but my entire family. I mean, we literally packed up my entire family, moved 1,500 miles away from everybody that we knew. Every family member we had, every friend we ever had, because we both lived in that area our entire lives, all four of us. So it was a big, big, big change for us. I would do it again every single day of the year, every day of every year of my life. That's how impactful and how important it has been for me and my family. My family has prospered. My family has become more free. My family has become healthier, happier, and just all around better because of this move. I have never met anybody who wasn't significantly impacted by coming up here and being a part of this. And, you know, it's not for everybody. I concede that fact. It's definitely not for everybody. But if it's something that you can do, that you can physically do, but, you know, your job can move or anything like that, it's absolutely worth looking into.
Cool. All right. I wanted to jump to something else because I was listening to one of your shows recently, and I'm going to switch gears here. I think that one of the best takes on Alfie Evans I heard was yours two episodes ago. So, for people who don't know, why don't you tell people who Alfie Evans was and your take on the whole thing?
So Alfie was the second high profile case in England over the last couple of years where, a child was basically given a death sentence by bureaucrats in England. You know, Charlie Gard impacted me pretty heavily because, you know, any child going through something like that is impactful on me. But this child actually looked very much like one of my kids, when he was about the same age. So this one just really, matter of fact, I don't know if you picked it up when you listened to that episode, actually, I had to stop recording several times because I was crying trying to get through it because it was so, so hurtful for me.
Yeah, I heard that.
But basically he had a terminal disease that some doctors in Italy, for example, thought that could be treated and at least managed to the point where he could have somewhat of a life for several years. And the family of Alfie went to Italy, got an Italian citizenship for the child, wanted to get him out of England. And the judges in England said, no, you can't do it, based on the hospital alone saying that it was better for the child to die in England than to have a chance at some sort of life in Italy. So the judge literally basically handed down a death sentence to Alfie. They surrounded the hospital. They had armed guards at the hospital so they couldn't try to, you know, sneak the kid out even. I mean, literally holding this child in the hospital with guns to keep him from having a chance at life. Would that chance have been significant? Probably not, but it was a chance. Tell anybody that if they've got a chance at life, they are denied the right to go after that chance. And you're showing me a totalitarian government that gives no shits about anybody except for their ruling. And that's all this was about. It wasn't about the child. It was about the power that the bureaucrat had in his hand to say no. That's all it was about. And so he passed away in the hospital because he was given no shot at life. He was basically taken off of life support. And there's a heartbreaking photo of Alfie holding, you know, giving his mother a hug when he's off the life support. And he just has this look on his face like just angelic. It's just the most beautiful picture I think I've ever seen in my life. And they basically sentenced this kid to death.
Yeah, it's, yeah, they made it seem like as soon as they took him off life support that he would be gone, and he continued to live.
Yeah, for it was 2 or 3 days, yeah. Something like that.
I remember you were talking about the guards. I mean, it was actually they were actually police lining the front of that hospital, not only not allowing people, not allowing them to bring him out, but I mean, I'm fully convinced it was trying to block anybody from getting in that would try to take him out of there. And yeah. When I saw that line of police, all I could think was, this is why they disarmed you.
Right. Absolutely. You nailed it. And you're absolutely right. I actually had a question. I do an AMA on my show every once in a while. And my next episode I'm releasing in a couple of days. Somebody asked me about the British disarmament being a success. I'm sorry. It's an unqualified failure. You know, their knife, you know, attacks have gone dramatically up, and all of these other types of crimes, and even gun crime has gone dramatically up because now only the criminals have guns. But you're absolutely right. They disarmed everybody in the country as much as they possibly could, except for the criminals who are going to always be armed. Because, I mean, let's be honest, with a little bit of shopworking tools and a little bit of knowledge, you can make a gun out of anything. So you're not really disarming anybody. You're only disarming the law abiding. But you're right. They disarmed an entire nation, and then they can stand out there with those guns with impunity and stop life-saving measures for a baby, a beautiful, beautiful little baby boy.
Or they can take, like they just did this weekend, they could just kidnap Tommy Robinson off the street and march him right to prison.
Right.
I mean, right to prison. I don't know if people realize that. He did not go to a courtroom. He went right to prison. They disarmed those people, and now those people are hostages.
Yep, absolutely. And, you know, could it happen here? I would say probably not. I think that if, you know, of course we hear about it every time there's a school shooting. But I know for a fact that my guns are never going to be turned in. My guns are never going to be found. I've got guns that I don't know that I could find at this point. So I know that the feds aren't going to find them all. There's no doubt about that. So, you know, there's no doubt that this population will always, always be heavily armed, no matter how much they try to disarm us. Now, of course, a lot of sheeple will turn in their guns. And of course, we've seen, who was the porn star who turned in her shotgun and, you know, all of these, Mia Khalifa or whatever. So you'll always have those sheeple, you know, who turn in their guns, but the vast majority of Americans are not going to do that, either through neglect or just saying, you know, fuck you to the feds.
Well, you saw what just happened in New Jersey. New Jersey, ordered anybody who had a bump stock to turn them in, and nobody turned them in. And I think the same thing happened in Colorado as well. Where people,
well, and that's the thing about bump stocks is they're not registered. They're not serialized at all. It's just a piece of plastic. Yep. So yeah, I mean, I wouldn't turn it in either. That thing's going in my wall, or it's going, in a cache dug out in the backyard or something. It's not going to the feds. Even look, the bump stock is a useless piece of equipment. It sucks.
It's horrible.
It beats the hell out of your arm. It's inaccurate as shit. It's for nothing more than fun. It is a useless tool as a weapon. But regardless, I wouldn't turn mine in for any amount of money in the world. There's no way.
You talked about how you'd never turn guns in. I mean, when you have people like Cody Wilson doing what he's doing,
defense distributor.
Yeah, the gun control debate is pretty, I mean, if you can make a gun in your house, the gun control debate is basically moot. Because,
and I know 25 people in New Hampshire that have 3D printers at home, so we're not going to have any problems.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, oh, you want to take away my guns? I'll just make one tomorrow.
Right. And oh, hell, tomorrow nothing in 2 hours.
And they'll, and I think they realize that too. I think that's why there's no serious talk about gun control right now, because it's, first of all, what do we have? 300, 400, 500 million out there. So many of them were privately bought, not, you know, weren't, 4473 wasn't even filled out. So, I mean, really, what could they, I mean, it's not Australia where people are just going to be like, oh, you want to buy back our guns? Sure, here you go. No, that's not an attitude in this culture that, it does well. You know?
No, definitely not. I mean, you know, look, there, like I said, there are a lot of sheeple in this country, of course, but the vast majority of Americans still have that live free or die spirit that, you know, sure, we'll take a little bit. And, you know, some will take more than others. I'm to the point where I'm done giving. You know, I'm done taking. I am fucking done. And that's one of the reasons I'm here. But there are people who will take and take and take. But at some point, they're gonna cross that line and they're gonna have a bigger problem on their hands than they've ever had. And hopefully, I hope that does not happen in my lifetime, because I don't want my kids to have to go through, you know, something like that. But at the same time, if it happens to my generation, then maybe my kids will actually have the kind of freedom that you know, we dream of, we talk of. Now, I certainly don't want a revolution. I don't want a violent revolution. I'm a very peaceful person. I mean, I'm not a pacifist by any means. I'm certainly a warrior when I need to be. But I believe in peaceful solutions. I believe in nonviolent solutions. I believe in non-political solutions. I mean, I'm a voluntarist 100% of the way. To me, voting is too much force. So I'm certainly not going to initiate any sort of physical violence against anyone. But if it came to that, if it came to that point, sure, I'd be on the front lines with everybody else, because if it happens, it's going to be pretty nasty, I think.
Well, let's hope that doesn't happen. Let's hope that, you know, let's hope that people desire freedom, liberty. Well, let's hope that grows in people's hearts and they start to realize that the government isn't who gives you that.
Well, and that's part of my philosophy, is that, you know, I feel like Larkin Rose. I don't know if you've read his The Most Dangerous Superstition. Yeah. I fully believe in what he says in that book, that it is a superstition, just like any other superstition. If we stop believing in it, if we stop giving them the legitimacy that we give them every time we go to the ballot, every time we fill out another document, every time we bend over again, if we stop giving them that legitimacy, eventually they won't have any legitimacy. Right now, it's estimated anywhere from 1 to 3% of United States citizens don't pay taxes, don't get driver's license, don't fill out, you know, have no contact at all with the government. What if that were 30%? What if that were 50%? Can you imagine? I mean, government would dry up immediately. Their finances would immediately dry up. Their legitimacy would dry up in the rest of the 50%, because the other 50% are sitting there like, well, shit, why am I spending all this money? Why am I giving them all this money if these people are getting away with it scot-free? Even at 20%, the number would be so large, the government couldn't keep up with it. They could not arrest, try, and convict and jail 20% of the population.
When I first became a libertarian, and when you first become a libertarian, you go all through, how can we do this? What can we do? What can we do? And that one of the first things that came to my mind was, if 20 or 30 million people decided they weren't going to pay taxes, that they were going to go in to their employer and, you know, put that they have 15 dependents, which basically gives them their full paycheck except for the obvious things, but, you know, basically it would be no income tax. And at the end of the year said, no, we're not, you know, no, what could they do?
Right. Well, the problem is right now is that our governments have basically coerced and forced employers to become the tax agents. You know, our employers are spending billions of dollars every year figuring out the taxes, collecting the taxes, sending the taxes to the state and the federal and the federal government. Our employers have become our tax agents. That's a big problem. And I've, you know, been looking at ways of mitigating that, that exposure that I have from a tax perspective. But, you know, I do a lot of stuff that, you know, it's frankly off the books. A lot of the podcasting stuff, a lot of audiobooks and audio editing and things that I do. You know, that's the great thing about being in such a network like we have up here, is that I've developed all of these contacts that have allowed me to do all of these things in such a way that I don't have to report a lot of things, especially when it comes to cryptocurrencies. If you hold your cryptocurrencies right, nobody knows about it.
Oh, yeah.
Nobody.
Yeah.
So that's why cryptocurrencies is such a game changer, because you can literally completely dissolve your your income from the government. They would have no idea about any of it just because it's, you know, it's all on the blockchain and it's all protected.
Yeah. I mean, and if you have more businesses start accepting cryptocurrency, what can they do? I mean, right. it's not going to be taxed. You don't have to, you know, the businesses that do take, do they apply tax?
Well, I guess it depends. I mean, I can't speak for all of them. I'm sure some of them probably try to follow all the laws that they can. I'm sure some of them probably ignore a lot of the laws when it comes to it as well. I know, for example, one of the restaurants here, some of the waitresses don't report any of their crypto tips that they receive. They don't report it at all. Good for them. Yeah. Absolutely. Of course, they probably do the same with some of their cash tips as well, which, hey, bully for them. Yeah. I mean, anything that starves a dragon, I don't care if you're starving the dragon of a penny or $1 million, we've got to start starving that dragon, because without money, they can't do jack shit to us. So everything we can do to starve that dragon is important.
Yeah. Agorism is just another tool. You know, it's just another round in the chamber to,
And that's why my show is LAVA. It's libertarian, anarcho-capitalist, voluntarist, agorist, because they are all important. Agorism is important. I mean, you know, I was a big fan of Sec 3, Samuel Edward Konkin III, and, you know, his writings. I don't think that agorism alone can do it, like Sec 3 thought, but I do believe that agorism is a very, very important part of it, for sure.
Well, do you have anything you want to say? Do you have anything you want to plug? Why don't you talk about your podcast? Because your podcast really is good, man.
I appreciate that.
You're way more polished than me.
Well, that's because I spend a lot more time. I mean, I literally write every single word of my podcast before I record it, because I want to make sure that I am doing the very best that I can to squeeze a lot of information into one small coherent package. Because, you know, I've listened to so many podcasts that will go on for 2 or 3 hours and you're getting 20 minutes of good content out of that. I don't have the time for that shit. So I do everything I can to compact it as small as possible. And that's why I pre-write my material. But the podcast of The Lava Flow, you can get it on any podcatcher. It's on YouTube. It's on, thelavaflow.com. It's the first podcast in my podcast network, which is called Pax Libertas Productions. And we now have 6 podcasts, anything from, the ANCAP Barbershop, which is actually run by an ANCAP barber out of Alabama. I mentioned One Free Family earlier, the Peaceful Parenting and Radically Unschooling podcast. We have an anarcho-Christian, which is, an anarchist Christian perspective, from a good friend of mine who's actually coming to Portfest this year. Trying to think of what else. I know Essential Libertarianism, which is one that I do, where I basically take some of the best material out there on voluntarism, from voluntarist.com. They've been putting out material since the 70s, and they've got a website just chock full of stuff. You know, most people don't have the time to go through a website and read article after article after article. So every week I drop a new, you know, 5, 10, 20, 30 minute, fantastic article about voluntarism from their article. I mean, from their website, and I read it in an audio format. So you can listen to it on the go. And I know I'm missing a podcast, but and Resist the Empire. That's one of my favorite, actually. It's a libertarian view of the Star Wars universe. You know, Star Wars is chock full of politics and diverse characters and a ton of libertarian stuff. And me and a buddy of mine started that one, and now I've had to kind of step away because I've been so busy, but he's picked up another co-host. It's really, really great stuff. So if you're into Star Wars and you love libertarianism, definitely check out Resist the Empire.
Awesome. Well, Roger, it was a pleasure. I'm sort of upset that the other one did not come out, but I think there was a lot of good information here tonight, especially anybody who's had questions about the Free State Project, because I think it's important. I mean, we talk about local, getting as local as possible. And, you know, Hoppe had What Must Be Done in 1996, and so many people have read that 14 pages and, you know, and said, yes, you know, this is, we need to get as local as possible, and you guys are doing it. So, wanted to get your take on it, your knowledge, and, man, I just appreciate it.
Well, and I appreciate it too. I mean, thanks for having me back on since we had so much fun the first time, we wanted to redo it. But one more thing I did want to plug, my wife and I are actually producing Pork Fest this year. And if you haven't heard of Pork Fest, this is the 15th annual year for Pork Fest. It's the biggest libertarian event in the country. And, you know, this year we're having all kinds of workshops and, you know, it's a full slate of kids and family programming, but it's also got nightlife and it's basically living a week of anarchy in the White Mountains of New Hampshire, some of the most beautiful country that I've seen in the entire country. And I've been all over the country. And the White Mountains of New Hampshire, I'd put up against just about any place in the country. So, you know, definitely check it out at porkfest.com. The tickets are super cheap for an entire week. The tickets are $80. Find a libertarian convention that's going to give you an entire week's worth of content with 220 events, 220 plus events for $80. You're not going to find it. But we've got Ben Swan coming, David Freeman, Milton Freeman's son, Paul Jacob, who was actually arrested and spent time in prison for dodging the draft in the 80s. Kerry Wedler's coming. Eric July is going to be speaking, and Backwards is putting on a hell of a concert. Mm-hmm. Lynn Ulbricht is coming. Ross Ulbricht's mother, the Dread Pirate Roberts. Jeffrey Tucker's coming. I mean, it's a hell of a lineup, and you don't want to miss it. So check it out at porkfest.com.
Cool, man. Thank you so much, and have a great evening.
Yeah, thanks so much, Matt.
I want to thank you for tuning in to episode 114. I want to thank Roger for coming on. I want to remind you that both of my books are available on my website, freemanbeyondthewall.com/store, and they're only available for cryptocurrency. If you want to use fiat, you can go to Amazon, and both of the books are there. But I'm real excited to put my books out there and make them available for cryptocurrency as well. So thanks for tuning in. I have a great interview set up for tomorrow, which I will release on the weekend. I think you guys are going to love this one. So take care, and I'll see you on the weekend. Bye.